Hello and welcome to the Smart Beauty Podcast. I'm your host, Viola Levy, beauty journalist and founder of copy-led branding agency, Smart Beauty Creative. I'm so excited to be talking to today's guest, Dr. Olivia Ann, co-founder of Floose. The period care industry has been stagnant for decades, with two main brands dominating the market. I think we all know who they are. It's only now that creative entrepreneurs like Dr. Olivia are starting to really shake things up for the better. Together with her partner, Aaron Koshy, she created the world's first flushable microplastic-free period pad, which is no mean feat when you think about the technical challenges involved. The materials obviously need to hold during use, but break down completely when flushed, which some might say is impossible, and that's what the two were frequently told by manufacturers. So in response, they decided to build their own technology and have since raised $17 million to develop it further. And Floose is also now stocked in Boots and Tesco's. Olivia shares how she went from working in the NHS to running a femtech startup and what it really takes to challenge an industry that hasn't innovated in decades. Let's get into it. So Olivia, thank you so much for joining me today. What made you think that this was a concept worth pursuing, first of all?
Oh, well, thank you so much, first of all, for having me on the podcast today.
You're welcome.
I'm absolutely thrilled to be here. And one of the things that you talked about, it's a simple concept, but I absolutely do not claim that I'm the first one to have thought of it. When I absolutely started the journey, we had lots of messages coming in being, oh, I also wanted it to be flushable. But I think I've always thought about, you know, what if a pad was flushable? But I think what really helped us was the technological advancements that were being made at the same time that we were looking into it at the time of the market. So I'd say that we were really lucky in our timing and looking into that. Other people had looked at it before, but one of the things I was genuinely led by was hearing stories of other people who either didn't know that period products shouldn't be flushed, like tampons, or knew that they shouldn't flush, but still flushed anyway. And so one of the things that I learned really at the start of my journey was that one in three women in the UK had admitted to flushing period products within the last 12 months, which kind of shocked me. So I was like, you know, if there's such a wanted behavior, there isn't a single product in the market that can fulfill those needs. And so I thought, you know, let's try and have a go at it ourselves.
And what was the story leading up to the launch? Just sort of touching on your own personal background, was this something that you'd wanted to do for a long time? Or how did it all come about?
Well, I stumbled into it quite as a personal experience, as a consumer, because I was looking for better products for myself in the market. I had recently been diagnosed with endometriosis, and so I was looking for products that were better for myself, but also I just moved into my like sort of housemates at university and stuff. So I really wanted to better understand like how to lessen my impact on the planet. But whilst doing so, I sort of got disenfranchised with what the options in front of me. And I was very lucky to be living with my housemate at the time, Aaron, who is now my co-founder and also partner today. And within that, we were looking at really the burden of sustainable guilt that I really feel has been unfairly thrust upon us as consumers, as we like stand in front of the shelf or in front of the bin, trying our best, but within a system that is almost feels like it's designed for us to fail. And so I was like, you know, let's create a company, let's create a product that really makes the easiest thing for you and rewards you and the planet at the same time. So yeah, that was a real thing. That was a personal drive. But in university, I started off doing medicine. So I ended up working in the NHS for a couple of years. But then as the product development and further research into this, I stepped out of it and went into this full time a couple of years after the NHS.
Oh, I'm very pleased that you did. And it's crazy, really, when you think, when I was a teenager, there were two brands that always in Tampax that our mothers had, and it just baffles me that the period care market is only now starting to diversify and independent brands are coming to the fore. Do you think that's mainly because we just started to talk about it a lot more now
Absolutely. I
Yeah, quite
think
demanding.
having that conversational space to be able to have those discussions to we're still, I would say, still got a little bit further to go in sort of supporting women in the workplace and those who menstruate to be able to have the conversations freely about this. And I think having those transparency discussions about what goes into the products, how these products are made, and the impact that they truly have on not just the planet but our bodies. We're only just about understanding the impact between microplastics and in chronic inflammatory conditions and things that can be triggered and further worsened by that. And especially with such intimate products that stay against our skin, not continually, but as a batch of them across 5 to 7 days, this is something that absolutely we need further clarity on. And I think, like you say, with these huge behemoths and big strategic incumbents in the market, I'm really pleased to see this new wave of like transparent companies coming in, questioning the industry status quos. And we hope to be part of that. Yeah,
I
journey.
read a crazy statistic. I don't know if you've come across it, saying that there are more tests done on hamster food than there are on traditionally on period products. Have you come across
What?
that?
Well, I've not read that
Wouldn't
statistic,
surprise
but that
me if
does
it were,
not
but that were
surprise
true.
me.
I can't verify. I'll try and verify that.
Well, no, but that does not surprise me. One of the things that I'm absolutely passionate about is getting the data out there. One of the things that currently we're supporting is endometriosis and adenomyosis and getting the support that they have within the workplace so that they could get 3 paid sick leaves per month as they support, like as so that they don't have to choose between pain and pay. And one of the things that we know is that 1 in 10 people in the UK, 1 in 10 people in the UK have diabetes, and the amount of go that goes into research for there, 1 in 10 women have endometriosis, but that has nowhere near the amount of money that goes into the research for conditions and symptoms and cures and things like that. And so that's one of the things that we really hope to be able to do is start shedding light on areas that is lacking data so that we can get better and safer research and safer products out there.
Because there's obviously the sustainability angle of them being flushable, but it's also super convenient. Like I myself, I say I've been a long time customer, and having a toddler and just chaotic home life, it's just so much easier to just be able to flush something down the loo. I mean, what was
Yeah.
the main kind of focus, or were they both equally important to you?
Well, no. For us, it was never, we never wanted to have the change in consumer behavior that didn't feel easier. We wanted something that felt instinctual. And it was genuinely a moment where I had run out of pads. I didn't realize that I was still on my period. And so I just used some toilet paper to be able to just guide me over for the next time
All
until I
been
was able to
there.
get my hands on pads. And then as I was flushing that away, I was like, you know what? What is the actual difference in the composition of these products? Like, surely these are just plant fibers. What are the ways that we can do this so that we can make it flushable and easier? Because we want to, you know, naturally and instinctually flush it away. That's so that so much so that 1 in 3 women in the UK have done. So that was really the point of we never wanted to sacrifice that convenience. And that's why it was important for us that every part was flushable, not just the pad. The thing that took us another 2, 3 years to develop were actually the flushable peel papers on the back, how to make sure that they were fully safe, fully flushable, and fully sustainable. And then also the pouch itself, so that everything that you felt was just convenient, wasn't just the pad. But yeah, that for us was therefore creating something that was first of all safer and then simpler and then also undermined by sustainable.
Now, what was the, I mean, we can go on a whistle stop tour of this, but in terms of developing the product and getting it manufactured, I mean, I'm sure you were met with a lot of pushback in the beginning where people are saying this can't be done. And you mentioned a few of the issues with all the different components, making sure that those were all flushable too. And what was that whole journey like? And was there ever a point where you were thinking, okay, maybe we should change tack and develop something else?
No, you're right. I mean, when I look back at the development process of it, it has been littered with both hurdles, but we've been very, very fortunate that at each point where we found points of difficulty where the industry was saying it's impossible, we managed to find a partner who shared the vision and was like, no, let's find a way. So first of all, with our raw materials, we had to source everything that was water dispersible, but also microplastic free and fully biodegradable. So all three of those things had to be a necessity.
Is that the main criteria for something to be called flushable? And is
Yes,
that what you
exactly.
had to?
Exactly. And we also wanted to source it so that it was global. So we wanted to ensure that our supply chain was defensible, not just, let's say, in the UK, but also in Asia and also in America and Europe. And so having and building those was the first step. And then converters, how do we convert that in a way that's sustainable, in a way that doesn't use microplastics, that doesn't use a high amount of energy? And that was, again, finding partners along there. But I think one of our most important challenges was the scaling up of the manufacturing process. So before, we used to build these pads out of hand. We were doing our early product testing, so each pad took about 15 minutes by hand, these handcrafted products. But now we've been able to build a machine that creates these around 600 pads per minute. And in order to do that, there were three main things that the industry told us was impossible. So number one was that all products are built with this hot melt acrylic glue. So even if all of the products around it and the materials are biodegradable, because they're bonded together with this hot melt acrylic glue, it means that not only does it release microplastic, but it fails to make it further biodegradable. The second part was also the core. Within there, you have this super absorbent polymer, which is typically made from petrochemicals and polyethylene and plastics. So we replaced that with a cellulose base, a completely plant-based way that almost acts like starch. So you can add a bit of water in, it thickens and forms a gel, but as soon as you over flood it with water, it completely loosens and of course is biodegradable. And finally, of course, is the plastic backing sheet. We've replaced that with something that's completely water soluble, microplastic free, and allows it to be biodegraded away within 30 days. And so as part of that machinery, we partnered with an Italian machine firm, and we've built that machine. It took us about 3.5 years to
Oh
build
my
and test.
gosh.
But we're really, really proud of that. And that, I think, was our biggest hurdle to get to this point so far.
And then also there's the performance issue as well, because in a competitive market, you have to make sure they're leak proof. And I remember these sort of fancy pads we got God, 20 or so years ago, where they had these tiny little gel beads in them. I don't know if you remember those, but goodness knows what they were doing to like the waterways of the planet. But yeah, how did you manage to make it so that they were still high performance and would prevent leakage and other issues sort of relating to that?
Yeah, you've hit the real sort of a crux of the question on the head there. It only took us a few months to make a pad that was flushable. It took us another 5 years to make something that was really absorbent, high endurance, and flushable.
Oh
And
gosh.
part of that, I would say, it's not a single answer, but I would say like an onion of answers. At the core of it, we've got a patented technology that allows the core to be super absorbent in a way, sort of like a one-way street. So it absorbs blood and fluid from the top down and traps it in a sort of gel-like core. But as soon as the entire core is flooded with water, with a high volume of water, it dissipates, breaks apart, and dissolves and moves away to be biodegraded. So that's the first sort of bit. Second part of it is also how the materials that we use within it. We've worked a lot with our converters and raw material suppliers to ensure that they are the right formulations and created in a way that they are no longer, each part is no longer than the length of a human eyelash, so 3 millimeters. So as soon as they are met with the force of a flush, they are able to dissipate away. But each fiber is highly, highly absorbent. And because we've been able to replace all of that existing conventional plastic with these cellulose and polymers, that has allowed it to be naturally much more absorbent than the existing products. And so with that, we've been able to do continuous testing. And so along the journey, we've had about 65,000 people along the journey who's trusted us with their period
Gosh.
care
Yeah.
and really helped us develop and given us feedback. Hopefully you would have seen along the journey all the feedback and product trials that we always ask people to do, and each time we have a minimum of, let's say, 150 participants to ensure that we've got a good sort of trial basis there.
It's such a tricky balance. That's why I'm just so like in admiration of what you've achieved, because yeah, it's, you think about it, it has to sort of hold the liquid, but then also be able to disintegrate. So I think the fact that you managed to achieve that is incredible, to be honest.
Oh.
And in terms of costing as well, because people aren't going to spend a lot of money on a premium period care product necessarily, are they? And given that, you're a sustainable brand, there's, less product runs, it's a lot more expensive to manufacture. So how did you manage to make all of that side of things work?
Oh, well,
Keep the
thank you
cost
so
down.
much. That has been really a challenge for us because we first of all have the increased barrier that the materials themselves are much more expensive than the existing petrochemicals or even I would say cotton or existing sort of materials like that because they're much more used within the industry. And also currently our sort of volumes of scale are not competing with the existing sort of larger companies within the space. And so we're still building our way within this journey. The second part is also we are still in the process of continuing that value engineering of our products. And so right now we're striving for the best for our products. And so each process hasn't been optimized for cost. And so as we've been doing that, one of the things that we are doing is we hope to be able to, right now we're really pleased that we've been able to bring these boxes. So 3.99 for a pack of medium pads and 3.49 for a pack of liners. And we hope that as we continue this journey, we'll be able to make them more and more affordable for the mass market. But that's always been a priority for us that they're not so unaffordable because we really, really want to ensure that they are accessible to as many people as we can make them be.
And it's a pretty tough market. I mean, you've got the big dogs, like we were saying, like Always and Tampax. I mean, how did you feel sort of competing with them and sort of going into that market as a smaller player?
Well, if I'm honest, I was aware and I thought I had a strategy to go in terms of like, you know, create a good product. But in hindsight, I think I was a little naive in terms of, you know, like we'll start with this product. But I've been very, very fortunate that I've had a significant amount of funding. So we've had about 17 million pounds worth of funding so far to go into the R&D and the tech side
Oh,
of the
that's
product. So
incredible.
thank you. And so as part of that, for us, the strategy has very much been build a sort of tech branded company. So the way that I've built Planera behind Fluce is a material technology company that builds these platform material technologies. So Flush-Tek, we've applied it first into Fluce, our own br consumer brand within femcare. But Flush-Tek itself could also be applied the flushable technology into like adult incontinence, into baby products, into household hygiene. And for us, that's an opportunity for us to really showcase the what Flush-Tek can do to one of the markets, but then also look to license Flush-Tek into existing ones. So let's say Pampers wants to become flushable. You could maybe in the future see a Pampers powered by Flush-Tek, and you'll know exactly what that'll do because it's a brand that you are aware and really like and use, but then would also have the power to be flushable as well.
That's brilliant. So you guys are basically, you're the manufacturers themselves. So instead of, you know, you're basically taking over that part of the process.
Yes, it wasn't the original plan, if I'm honest, but it's because necessity forced us down that road. And I would say that kind of COVID was the catalyst for it, as is many, many things for startups that have sort of lived through that era. But we had planned to work with a contract manufacturer to sort of try to get a flushable product to market. But then everything within the absorbent hygiene industry sort of shut down and, of course, diverted to personal protection equipment and masks. And so for us, we sort of were like, either do we sit on our hands and wait this out and see what happens in 2 years' time? Or we sort of thought, let's try and do this ourselves. What are the ways that we can do to build this machine and get this out there and sort of prove the concept? And so that was a decision that we was sort of we made when we heard the Boris Johnson speech that evening.
And so did you have that kind of technical background at the time, or was it something that you had to then go back to school for, as it were?
Yeah, well, my
Explain.
co-founder Aaron is an engineer, so he is a design engineer and a biochemical engineer from Imperial. So he used his engineering skills. So both of us, however, I would say we sort of learnt on the go. We were very fortunate to have partners who taught us, and we sort of learnt things as through experience. But I would say we're very proud to be the inventors on the patents that we've got today.
What's been the feedback when you've had to pitch to retail buyers? Have they been very receptive, would you think?
Yes. So our strategy with the retailers was we really wanted to find partners who were aligned in their mission on sustainability, but also really aligned in finding that education and sort of brand education aspect, because we know that as a flushable product, you can't just stick us on a shelf and expect people to sort of immediately trust and understand like what that product is and what it can do for you. And so that's why we wanted to launch first with Boots, and they've been an incredible partner because
Huge
they have.
congratulations, by the way, on getting in there. Amazing.
Thank you. They have such space across their Boots app, their Advantage card, their emails, across their all of these sort of digital touch points that allow us for that education and sort of the introduction of Floose into the sort of consumer's hands. And secondly, with Tesco, we were really proud of launching with them because for us, the number one grocer in the UK, they provide that convenience to people when they're doing that weekly grocery shop. And we want to be able to be in places that our people are already shopping. And whilst we've had our website open, really, I would say that was finding that product market fit for that product, ready for that retail consumer, because we know that over 90% of women still shop in stores for their period products.
And how's it varied, from being completely D2C to suddenly being in retailers? Like, what are the main differences and challenges that you've encountered with that?
So on our website, we have access to all the data that we want immediately.
Yeah.
For retail, it was news to me, but you have to buy the data in order to be able to understand how your brand is doing. So that is,
Oh, wow, I didn't know that.
yes, I didn't know that either until I started this process. But there's a significant cost to sort of engaging with retailers, and whilst, of course, like everything, every part of that data is important and relevant for us to sort of learn and do that. That sort of immediacy of not having that, intricate wealth of data is something new.
Surely it suits the re
So,
it's in the interest of the retailer, surely, because obviously it helps you sell your product better in their stores.
I know.
Obviously.
I
Yeah.
agree. And so that is, I would say, it feels like a lot slower of a turnaround. Like for us, like if we launch something today, we'll be able to figure out by this afternoon like how people are doing and what they're looking at. And so with that, we've got a few weeks delay in terms of understanding how everything is going. From the first few months of being in Boots, we've already had a discussion with them about launching new products. We're only 5 weeks into Tesco, so fingers crossed that that's
Yeah.
also something that we'll continue to do in the future.
Because I think some founders tend to have a bit of naivety, thinking, right, I've got into that retailer, now that's it. I've achieved it.
Oh
That's the end of the rainbow. And it's actually, as I'm sure you're
no,
aware,
it's that like it's, you've got a foot in the door, and whilst
yeah, but you have to work hard to stay there, right?
yes, but we've also only got two products on their shelf. Like we want to have build up to a full shelf. We want to be able to also not just stay in the fem care aisle, but talk about what are the other ways that Flushtec can support the retailers. And one of the main things that they responded really well to was the fact that this is a zero landfill product. This is something that will not go into the bins, something that can be completely biodegraded within 30 days to water, biogas, and fertilizer. And the other part was zero microplastics. So these two completely new claims to their fem care shelf was something that was like, okay, this is something that also helps them achieve their goals of, getting zero carbon by 2050.
And imagine when it comes to language and the tone of voice you use, did you sort of say, okay, we're going to be completely direct and upfront, and we're not going to use sort of terminology like, sanitary products or things like that, where we're sort of sanitizing the actual issue, but we don't want to be too the other way, where people are just like, oh, I'm going to scroll past that.
No, I'm so glad that you brought up the word sanitary pad, because that is one of our banned words in our
Yeah,
brand.
I hate that word. Like
Yeah, so
sanitary
that's why
products,
we
like.
always say either menstrual products or period care, because it's like let's just talk about what it actually is. And it's a great question about tone of voice. So as a brand, we have a lot of education to do, and also we've got to be credible in terms of being a flushable technology that is sort of bringing this to market. And so like we sort of weighed that up versus the disruptive nature in terms of how we want it to be. And so for us, I think we've landed more in being that bold, direct. We're never gonna sort of take 5 sentences to get to something that we could do in one. And we'll also be upfront in the scientific terminology that we do, always with references, so that we can have that credibility. And hopefully, through facts and through those bold claims, comes a disruption that we have there. Although we have strayed into that territory, our first ever out of home campaign, we called the Mother Flusher campaign, where we had strategically the word flush over a certain word across our campaign. So that was a brilliant way to, I think, sort of hopefully grab people's attention and sort of show the way that we could sort of be disruptive.
And as a founder, a female founder, do you feel a pressure to be a brand ambassador?
Yeah, well, I absolutely started off, I would call myself and Aaron technical founders. So we were very much product development. And as the brand launched and as we grew a community, it needed a face. And it felt like it was a sort of natural sort of decision for me to sort of help become and support that that requirement. It's a tricky balance and something that I'm still learning to do because I'm still working in the business, still working on things that require deadlines and submissions, but also starting to do things like coming onto this wonderful podcast and speaking to other founders and speaking to and having speaking engagements and things like that to help promote the brand and the messaging that we have. That's a question that I'll hopefully address in the upcoming years as I learn to balance that role. But I really love working in the business, and so I want to become a brand ambassador that is true to who I am as well within the business, and not lose that sight that is really passion driving for me.
But I guess it's about sort of leaning into what makes you unique and try rather
Yes.
than trying to be a
Yeah.
certain way that people are on social media. It can be tricky at times, I imagine.
Absolutely, because I'm passionate about speaking about sustainability and period care, which honestly does not make me the most fun dinner guest, but it does mean that I get to come on to places like this and talk about these topics, and that's brilliant because it's something that I really am passionate about. But I also really love, getting my hands dirty and getting the manufacturing up and going with anything
What's
else.
been the biggest learning curve for you throughout this whole journey that you've been on?
Oh, I think biggest learning curve for me was balancing the emotional roller coaster that we sort of go on along this business building journey. There's been some brilliant highs, but also some many low lows. And balancing those emotional sort of ups and downs. I've been very fortunate to have a co-founder who's also my partner. And so having someone who's been there in the trenches with me to share that with, and also lean on my team to go through those hard times is something that I'm very fortunate to have, and something that I encourage everyone to sort of build those connections and support system as they go through. Because yeah, that is something that I'm still learning to do better every day.
Definitely. I think we rarely talk about founders and their mental health, but it is so fragile because you're fighting so many fires all the time. And I think having to stay resilient and grounded can be a real challenge. And I think that's something that.
Yes, because also it's my first time along this time really like managing and caring for a team, and I feel responsible for ensuring that are they not burning out, making sure that they're all motivated, driven, see the same goals that we're going on, and sort of on the same track together, and that's all sort of stuff that I've been learning as we've been doing together, which is part of the best part of the job.
And what's your ultimate dream for the brand, say in like 5 or 10 years' time? Where would you ideally like to take it, or anything else you'd like to develop along the way?
In 5 years' time, I would love for the industry to have sort of asked itself, well, why aren't, all disposable period pads flushable if they can be just as performing? And not only is Floose hopefully in more retailers, but also you'll start to see Flush Tech in other brands. So I'd love to start licensing that into other brands, and we don't want to be sort of jealous over our technology. We want to share it and get it into as much of the market as possible. So yeah, I hope that it's the start of our journey, and we'll hopefully also be in different markets outside the UK as well.
Thank you so much, Olivia, for chatting with me. Really appreciate it. And honestly, I really admire what you have both achieved and the product itself. As I say, I've been a long time user, so huge fan anyway. So it's a real pleasure to chat with you. Thank you.
Oh, thank you so much for having me on the podcast, and really brilliant time. Has brilliant questions and a really
Oh,
amazing
thank you.
conversation with you. Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed that episode. All links will be in the show notes, and feel free to visit smartbeautycreative.com or visit us over on Instagram to find out more about what we do. And if you enjoyed listening, please don't forget to rate and review Smart Beauty on iTunes, as it helps people find us. See you next time.